It all starts with a root.
Oh, can you go?
An organism.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
A living, breathing feeling.
Bring on to the other side.
A being that comes to life. This living, breathing being is rock and roll. And this is Roots of Rock, podcast edition. Here's your host, John Tompkins.
Rock world has taken a lot of hits lately. We've lost legends and icons, from Chris Cornell to Tom Petty, Chester Bennington to Gord Downie. And those are all huge, massive losses to the rock world. And their contributions have been covered extensively. But there's one guy, another guy that died recently. He was an innovator and an originator in the rock world. His death flew under the radar in the mainstream media. So we're going to try to do what we do best on Roots of Rock. We're going to shine a light on one of those guys that made rock and roll what it is today. Fats Domino. He died on October 24th, just a couple weeks ago. This weekend, we're going to pay tribute to him and find out how far and wide-ranging his influence truly was. Now, it's not an exaggeration to say that Fats is one of those artists that you can literally trace every rock and roll act back to. Amongst a few other guys, you know, guys like Chuck Berry, Ray Charles, Howlin' Wolf, and a few others. Fats Domino was one of the guys that really helped facilitate the change between R&B, country, and blues into rock and roll. He was a native of New Orleans, and for anybody who's ever been to New Orleans, you know what a rich history and culture that city has from a musical perspective. It's in their blood in that city. You walk down the street, and the guys busking on the corner will stop you dead in your tracks. Every celebration, every get-together, every event involves music. And like a lot of people in New Orleans, Fats was born into a musical family. His dad was a part-time violin player, and his brother-in-law was a professional jazz guitarist, and it was that guy that taught Fats how to play piano. Fats was so talented that within 4 years of learning to play piano, he was invited to play with one of New Orleans' biggest big bands, and within 11 years, Fats was signed to Imperial Records. He wrote a song around that time with a longtime collaborator, a producer by the name of Dave Bartholomew. And that song, one of the first hits he ever had, was called The Fat Man. That song had reached 1 million copies sold. That was an insane amount of records for 1951, especially when you think about the fact that that song was considered one of the first rock and roll songs ever made. I mean, rock and roll wasn't even really a genre at the time that it was made. It was in retrospect that people started going back and pointing to that song as one of the first in the genre. Now, Fats wasn't really known for that fancy, you know, behind the back playing and dancing at the piano like some of his contemporaries like Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis were known for. He sold his records based purely on his musicianship, and he sold a lot of records in his day, including that one for the Fat Man. He sold 65 million records in the 50s and 60s, which is really impressive, especially again during that time period. Here's another one.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. You're the one to blame.
That song was actually originally made popular by Pat Boone, but the Fats Domino version soon took it over and became a much bigger hit. It was also the first song that a guy by the name of John Lennon ever learned to play. You think that left much of an impression on him? You think the Beatles may have been influenced a bit by Fats? John Lennon even released a recorded version of that song later on his rock and roll album, you might remember. That was where he covered a bunch of music and artists that had influenced him in his younger days, a lot of guys like Fats Domino. Cheap Trick released a version of that song, and the band The Killers, they just performed it live in New Orleans shortly after Fats died. there's no denying Fats' influence on the rock genre. And that's the kind of stuff that we love to find on Roots of Rock, digging into that deep stuff that still affects the music that we listen to today. Couldn't talk about Fats Domino, not play Blueberry Hill, right? Fats made that song a hit in 1956, and it's been covered by countless people since. Artists like Elton John, Jerry Lee Lewis, The Beach Boys, Elvis, Vladimir Putin.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
Now, if you, the listener, find it strange that there exists a recording of Vladimir Putin, yes, that is him, singing Blueberry Hill, that's your opinion. I, for one, don't think it would be wise to badmouth the president of Russia live on the radio, no matter where you are, so I'll just leave the judgments to you, the good listeners of Roots of Rock. But just know that if you do find it strange, you'll find it even stranger that he's performing that song in front of a lot of big-time Hollywood celebrities. You can check it out online for yourself. In the audience, you can see Kevin Costner, Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn, Gerard Depardieu, who's really into the performance, by the way, and Sharon Stone, who's also pretty into it, amongst a lot of others. Anyway, he performed it back in 2010, for a children's charity. It's a good cause. It's just, well, I'll leave it there. I'll leave it for you to do the rest. Back to the rock and roll business. I wanted to switch things up a bit on Roots of Rock this week. I typically start with a big artist that we play, one of our core artists, and work our way back into the roots. But since we recently lost Fats Domino, I wanted to start with him and work my way back up the rock family tree, so to speak. Fats was one of those guys that was so early on in the early days of rock and roll that he even influenced guys like Elvis and Buddy Holly and people like Bill Haley and his Comets.
Hey, rock and roll!
That song was originally a blues song written by a guy named Big Joe Turner, and it still has a lot of that original swing to the rhythm section. But the beat hits a little bit straighter than the stuff on the Fats Domino, a little bit more on the beat, right? And the instrumentation, it had changed in a way that was going to set rock and roll onto a totally different path than what Fats was doing. There's a horn section, a stand-up bass, and there's a piano, but it's less prominent. And that was a move that shifted things in that whole new direction. It was released in 1954, shortly after rock and roll fell out of popularity. And in the late 50s, it almost all but went away, except overseas. In Britain, right? The skiffle bands, those guys were really putting it together still, but in a totally different way. They got rid of the piano altogether. They pared it down to a guitar or two, bass, drums, and a singer. You know, bands like the Beatles and the Stones that just featured two guitars, a bass, drums, and a singer. That's it. Here's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. The Pretty Things with Midnight to Six Man. It features just two guitars, a bass, drums, and a singer. And listen to the difference that made to the sound.
I've never seen the people I know.
A lot louder, a lot grittier, and with a little less swing. It's not really hard to pick up on the change that happened in that late 50s lull, is it? And if you think those guys sound a lot like early Stones, you're not wrong. They were from the same era, the same musical background, and in fact, Dick Taylor, guitarist for the Pretty Things, was in a band before the Pretty Things that was called Little Boy Blue and the Blue Boys. Those guys eventually changed their name to the Rolling Stones. But let's hear from the Pretty Things again. Here's SF Sorrow Is Born.
Nobody thought there would be.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Sean Tompkins, and this is Roots of Rock, where we trace the roots and influences of some of the greatest music ever made. This week, we're starting at a rock and roll originator, Fats Domino, and working our way through rock and roll until modern times. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get into why that song we just heard, SF Sorrow Was Born by The Pretty Things, and the album that it comes from, was really important to Pete Townshend of The Who and the course of rock and roll history. Stick around to find out why.
Roots of Rock with Sean Tompkins. Podcast edition.
Hey, I'm Sean Tompkins, and this is Roots of Rock. On today's show, we started with Fats Domino. We learned a lot about him and his history, and then we made it all the way up to the British invasion. Now, the last song we heard before the break was called SF Sorrow Is Born. The album that song comes from is called SF Sorrow, and that was the fourth album by The Pretty Things, one of the British invasion bands. It was a rock concept album, maybe even one of the first. You could say it was one of the first rock operas. See, it was released in October of 1968 in England, but due to various circumstances, the album wasn't released in the States immediately. In fact, it came out 3 months after Pete Townshend and The Who had released their rock opera, Tommy. And Tommy, as we all know, was a smash hit in the States. It was huge. It was history-altering in the rock world. It blew up. But SF Sorrow had been on the airwaves for months before Tommy had in England. In fact, SF Sorrow was released at the exact same time as The Who began recording and writing Tommy in England in September of 1968. Pete Townshend has said that he'd never even heard SF Sorrow before writing Tommy. And I guess we have to take him at his word, but before he started saying that, he'd gone on record saying that he had heard it. And so he had a bit of a change of heart. I mean, maybe the lawyers got to him or something. I don't know. But it seems to beg the question, how could the first rock opera that was released in your backyard, in your hometown, in your country, not be an influence on you one way or another when you were a huge part of the musical scene at the time and in the middle of writing and recording your own rock opera? In late 1968 or early 69, before the album was totally done, The Who played a collection of their songs from the rock opera they were working on for a music critic they knew named Nick Cohn. Nick Cohn wasn't a huge fan of the music he heard. So Pete Townshend, who was essentially the main guy writing the album, he had a sit-down with Cohn and came to the conclusion that the album was too heavy into spirituality. Townshend was into his whole Indian guru phase, and the album had been written to reflect that. To lighten the subject matter a bit, Townshend decided to make the main character a deaf, dumb, blind kid, a pinball wizard. Why pinball, though? Nick Cohn, the music critic, he was a huge pinball guy. And as soon as Pete Townshend changed that character to be a pinball wizard, Nick Cohn loved it. And now that album, like I mentioned before, has gone on to change rock and roll history. It's sold over 20 million copies worldwide. The Hawker, a Sonny Boy Williamson song written in 1951 that The Who adapted for their Tommy rock opera. The Who were changing the format of rock and roll while still staying true to their roots. And right around that same time, a new generation of rock and rollers were just starting to come of age. Let's hear one more from The Who, and then we're going to find out which modern-day rock and roll god cites The Who as a huge influence. That album, Who's Next, was released in 1971. Eddie Vedder was about 7 years old. A couple of years later, when that album had been entrenched as a rock and roll classic, Eddie's babysitter snuck a copy into his parents' house one night and blasted it after they left. There's a cool interview done by Rolling Stone where Eddie talks about how life-changing that moment was for him, how it just made the hairs on the back of his neck stand up. And I'm sure at the time, he had no idea that he would go on to become one of rock and roll's biggest stars, but hearing that album was what set him on that course.
What the problem is, well, run into you, didn't leave a message, at least I could have learned your voice one last time.
You could really hear The Who in Pearl Jam's music, can't you? The Who really set up a lot of future rock and rollers with a template. They may not have directly invented the power chord. Some people debate whether they did or not, I suppose, but they did popularize it. There's no debate about that. They were the ones that cemented it as the quintessential sound associated with rock. I mean, if you're not driving, close your eyes and picture rock and roll being played. Quick, just do it. What do you see? Probably someone strumming a power chord on an electric guitar in front of a giant amp. And when you think of that guitar smashing, reckless behavior that's synonymous with rock and roll nowadays, you can thank The Who for that. The loud, distorted playing, the reckless behavior, you know, it kind of sounds like punk rock. It really does. And that's stuff that bands like The Clash really picked up on. And when you think of that classic album cover, the London Calling album cover from The Clash, you know, the one where Joe Strummer's smashing his guitar on stage? Where do you think he learned to do that? I'm Sean Tompkins, and this is Roots of Rock, where we dig into and trace the influences of some of the greatest music ever made, rock and roll. We've got one more segment coming up after the break, and in it, we're going to bring this whole rock and roll web together. We're going to tie in someone that's connected to both The Clash and Fats Domino. Stick around to find out who that is.
Roots of Rock with Sean Tompkins. Podcast edition.
Hey, I'm Sean Tompkins. Welcome back to Roots of Rock. Fats Domino was a giant in the early 50s. And as we covered earlier in the show, he was one of the architects of moving from R&B and country and blues into the new genre of rock and roll. I think we've done a decent job of covering how he did that, if I do say so myself. But what you may not know is that Fats was so influential that he had a hand in starting a whole different genre as well. See, in Jamaica in the late 1950s, people started being able to pick up radio stations from the USA. And one of the southernmost states in the US is Louisiana, where Fats Domino just happened to be from. And so he became pretty big in Jamaica. And one of the things that Fats was known for was that swinging rhythm where he played on the offbeat. A perfect example of that was on the song Be My Guest. That song is cited as one of the founding songs that led to the formation of a really specific genre of music. If you had to guess, what do you think it would be? It's ska, right? It's incredible that Fats had a hand in inventing two separate genres of music that both became massive. Because as the supply of American R&B records started to dry up in Jamaica in the 60s, the people of Jamaica started to form their own groups. And they'd been steeped in songs like Be My Guest. And when they started creating their own, they added in horn sections and that ska staccato guitar on the offbeat that it's known for. Look, here's a quick example of what I'm talking about from the early days. And you could really hear the similarity between it and Be My Guest from Fats Domino. Sample of some of the old original ska from Jamaica, right when it was changing from the Fats Domino inspired stuff into that raw ska sound. That was Toots and the Maytals, Never Grow Old. Now ska eventually branched off and slowed down, and reggae was formed as a result. And I wanted to play this for you in kind of a progressive style, so I wanted you to hear Fats Domino, into guys like Toots and the Maytal, and then into something that's known as classic reggae, so that you can hear how it progressed from one to the other within a matter of years. And if we're going to go to reggae, let's go to the one and only Bob Marley. Bob Marley, along with the early ska pioneers, influenced Joe Strummer and the Clash. Those guys were heavily into the ska reggae sound, obviously. And who does Bob Marley cite as one of his biggest influences? You guessed it, Fats Domino, who we also trace down through the rock and roll lineage all the way back to the Clash. It's more of a web of rock than roots of rock today, but I just love the way this stuff all ties together. I'm Sean Tompkins, and this is Roots of Rock. Thanks for joining me today. Let's do it again. Tune in for next month's episode, the Christmas episode, on the first Saturday and Sunday of December. Special thanks to Alex Zaretsky for technical consultation.